Welcome back to Arts About.
The show about art that, what is it, Sally?
That's a work of art in itself, Swan.
That's right. See, I've fallen to pieces because John's not here.
We have. And Swanee's back. So it's bound to be a rough ride, everybody.
Yeah, no, I've had a bit of excitement here pushing the buttons. I'm all a bit jittery, but yes. I'm sure I'll calm down.
Yes, very good, very good. Arts About is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClellan Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio, Swan.
Yes, and if you don't believe that, the sign is right behind me, everybody.
Yes, it's not very good for radio. Is it?
No.
Well, John has headed north to organise his latest exhibition of paintings at Art House Gallery in Rushcutters Bay. And Brody's also taken leave of his senses because it's usually actually Brody pushing the buttons, not John. And
or even me.
Yeah, that's right. So it's so wonderful to have the expertise of the Arts About go-to guy in here, Swanee. Good morning, Swanee. Thanks for rescuing me.
Yes, I cut short my burgeoning radio career and here I am, yanked back by my ponytail. Now, what do you say? John's on some kind of road trip in that powder.
He is,
powder,
yeah.
Blue Fiat.
Yeah, he is. We're going to ring him up a little bit later. I'm not sure where he is. He could be at the Eden Park, the apartment, the RPP.
Oh, the ones overlooking Aslings Beach there.
Yeah.
Yes, I like to call Eden my second home, and I've stayed
no,
there many
you do.
Times.
Have you ever stayed at the RPP apartment, though, that's there?
Yeah, and John will appreciate that I left the muesli in an airtight container.
Oh, well, we must ask him whether he found it.
I can just see him in that powder blue Fiat, you know, bouncing up the highway like in a Bugs Bunny cartoon or something.
With Amanda singing songs in the back.
Yeah. Well, let's leave it at that she's singing songs, all right?
Okay.
In sharing the front seat.
All right, then, we'll do. Now, we've got another great show. I've spoken with one of the artists of Fabric, and Fabric is an exhibition that's opened already at the Ian Potter Museum of Art, and it's also at the Margaret Lawrence Gallery of the VCA and the Sutton Project Place. It has made up part of the cultural arm of the Virgin Australia Fashion Festival, which has just finished in Melbourne, but this exhibition called Fabric continues until the 2nd of April.
What's it about?
Well, it incorporates conceptual, minimalist and performative approaches to textiles. And so to tell us what that means, we've got a contributing artist, Kate Sylvester, coming on later in the show.
Right. I was just trying to be a bit smart, you know, because yeah. It's called Fabric.
So, and what did you say? What's it made up of?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fabric. Well, did you know that fabric is actually the German word that means to manufacture?
Yes, I do. Fabrik.
Fabrik, yeah, indeed. Yeah, yeah. And in fact, this exhibition is spelled like the German word with a K.
Yeah, ich kann Deutsch verstehen.
Ah, yeah, gut, yeah. Sehr gut.
Ein bisschen.
Ein bisschen.
Yeah, yeah. Now what's next?
Also, we're going to be talking with Julie Collins, and she is the curator of the Lawn Sculpture Biennale that's on at the moment and runs for several weeks. It's an extraordinary, extraordinary exhibition with lots of different parts, and we're going to find out a bit about that from her. We're also going to give John a call.
Yeah, catch him on the Fiat phone.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. And Cliff will be in as well. So while we get Kate Sylvester, the artist at Fabric, on the line,
Yeah. Let's
listen to Staying in the Chat in the Shack by Azzo and Sarah. I love this.
Azzo and Sarah,
yeah.
All right. Well, let's see what it's like.
Coming up as part of the cultural arm of the Virgin Australia Fashion Festival program, the exhibition Fabric has opened at the Ian Potter Museum of Art at Melbourne Uni. And although the Fashion Festival itself finishes up today, Fabric continues at the Museum of Art until the 22nd of May. Fabric, with a K, incorporates conceptual, minimalist and performative approaches to textiles in a multi-venue exhibition held at the University of Melbourne's Ian Potter Museum of Art and the Margaret Lawrence Gallery at the VCA and also the Sutton Project Space. Conceived by Sarah Crowe Est and curated by Jane O'Neill, Fabric incorporates a long list of artists whose practices all shed light on fabric and our relationship with it. The exhibition creates a platform for the cross-pollination of ideas across the fields of fashion, textiles, and contemporary art. To enlighten us further, one of the contributing artists, Kate Sylvester, joins us on the line this morning to discuss fabric.
Good morning, Sally. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Thanks for coming on the program.
Pleasure to be here.
Kate, clothing, which is the go-to point for everybody when they're considering textiles and fabric, is in fact universal. Everybody has some experience of it. Wherever you are, wherever you come from, it crosses demographics, race, age, and continent in a very tactile and direct sense. We all use clothes to keep ourselves warm, for modesty's sake, to express ourselves and to describe ourselves. But what else should we be considering that you and the other contributing artists point out to us at Fabric?
Well, there's a plethora of entry points in regards to the ways in which we experience and express our relationship with the physicality of the textiles that surround us, whether it be through clothing or carpet or sheets. We are, from the day that we are born until the day that we die, we have this constant involvement with textile and with fabric. So various considerations, be it minimalist, conceptual and performative, are all being expressed by a variety of excellent artists at this show. So, there's just endless possibilities.
Can you explain to us a little bit about what your work involves?
Certainly. Well, my work specifically concentrates on the T-shirt. The T-shirt really has become a very popular globalised cultural form of clothing that is used primarily to express our individuality, whether it be through the style or the print or the sorts of things that we can have revealed, whether it's been to a concert that we've been to, books that we like, any sort of culture that references some part of our identity seems to be displayed on the T-shirt. So this idea of T-shirt art has become extremely popular recently, and I've sort of taken that idea and expanded it to contemporary art practices. So I'm actually dismantling the T-shirt, taking it away from its utilitarian function as a garment to be worn, and instead bringing it into the gallery space and utilising the incredible masses of fabric used to create every individual garment, and displaying those in new potential, whether it be through painting, illustration, sculpture, installation and even performance. I'm able to celebrate and really exaggerate the different forms and varieties that are available just within the one garment, the T-shirt.
That's so interesting because, you know, the T-shirt has become almost like a sort of an economic unit, hasn't it? You know, as a symbol, it's a symbol that absolutely everybody recognises.
Indeed.
And probably everybody has worn a T-shirt.
Very popular, and we all have our favourite one, you know. They almost become like a second skin that you treasure, and it makes your own smell, it makes you feel comfortable, and I think it's one of those go-to garments that when we want to feel relaxed and comfortable, we can always pull on your old favourite T-shirt.
That's true, it's so true. Now, Fabric is part of the Fashion Festival cultural programme. How did that come about?
Well, Fabric is a proud participant of the Virgin Australia Melbourne Fashion Festival, supported by Bureau 24/7, and the cultural program involved within the festival has really been expanding over the past few years to encompass a cross-pollination of multidisciplinary approaches to textile. So you'll find that it's not just our exhibition alone, that there are several exhibitions across a range of different galleries throughout Melbourne at the moment. And I would encourage people to have a look at the Virgin Australia Melbourne Fashion Festival website to see just how many opportunities there are available to really develop. The NGV, the 200 Years of Australian Fashion, there's an exhibition at the Bendigo Art Gallery at the moment, and that's just to name a few. The program has really extended, and it's really a chance for everyone to come and see a variety of different approaches to textile in association with the Fashion Festival.
The curator, Jane O'Neill, she's an artist, isn't she?
She is.
How did it come about? How did she decide that this exhibition was going to happen? I think you mentioned to me the other day that perhaps she already had this exhibition in mind, and it was a perfect fit with the Fashion Festival.
Yeah, so it was one of those wonderful moments of serendipity when Sarah Croest herself had conceived the idea of creating a textile-focused exhibition, and around the same time, Jane O'Neill was approached by the cultural program of the festival, seeking curators and artists that worked within this field. And it was just brilliant timing that they were seeking curators that worked within this field at the same time that Jane and Sarah had spoken of this. So they were able to then work with the Virgin Australia Melbourne Fashion Festival to help put on this show within the spaces that they have.
And I understand that fabric crosses three different venues.
It does.
So where's your work?
Happily, I have my work in two of the galleries. Mm-hmm. I have one piece hanging at the Ian Potter Museum of Art. And then I also have an installation and a video work at the Margaret Lawrence Gallery. And alongside the video work and the installation, I will also be doing a live performance on the last day of the show, which is the 2nd of April for the Margaret Lawrence Gallery. So I'll be doing a live performance there, followed by an artist talk as well. So,
fantastic. That's the Margaret Lawrence Gallery, is at the VCA, is that
that's
right?
That's the VCA, that's right.
Right. If people want to get along to that particularly, what's the best way for them to find out a little bit more about the exhibition and where they can go to see what?
Well, the best website to visit initially is the Virgin Australia Melbourne Fashion Festival website.
Oh, yes.
But then, of course, you can also visit the websites of each of the individual galleries to see their timetables and the artists involved and a greater, more in-depth description of what is actually happening throughout those galleries' programs.
Fantastic, because, of course, there are a lot of artists involved in it. Do you know how many there are across the three spaces?
Oh, I know that there's 24 at the Ian Potter and then, yes, the lesser number at the Margaret Lawrence and the Sutton Projects, about 6 or 7 at each, you know, especially taking in to regard the actual space available at each of these venues. So the Ian Potter, we have the entire first floor is dedicated to fabric, so much more room there. But, yeah, plenty of artists ranging from emerging, such as myself, to mid-career and very much established artists. You can see, yes, an incredible amount at all three spaces.
Well, there seems to be so many different reasons to go along and participate in this exhibition. If you're interested in fashion, if you're interested in textiles, if you're interested in art or performance, or you're interested in looking at our culture, I think this sounds like a fabulous thing to go along and see. Thank you very much for talking to us today, Kate Sylvester.
You're welcome, darling.
That's Fabric. It's on until the 2nd of April, as we discussed at those three different galleries. Thank you for talking to us today on Arts About. Bye-bye, Kate.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And now it's time for John On.
John, welcome.
Hello, Sally.
Hello, how are you?
I'm pretty good, actually. I'm standing on the side of a country road, a highway of some sort, out in the middle of the Australian bush, with flies buzzing around my head.
Yeah, you sound like you're on the dark side of the moon, John. Are you in the powder blue Fiat?
Yes, I'm in the powder blue Fiat, and I was going to admit that, in fact, I'm not spending all my time standing with flies buzzing around my head. I've been in the air-conditioned Fiat with Tony Bennett on.
Oh, lovely.
That's lovely.
There are cars going past, going caravans.
Yeah, so you've got to get stuck behind them again. Where exactly are you, John? I'm just getting a GPS fix on you now.
Yes.
You're going, keep. I'm just told the police, they've told me to keep you talking.
Yeah, well, almost, we're just south of Sale.
Right.
But on the coast road rather than the
right.
highway.
That's not very far up the road.
No, it isn't at all. I thought you were much further away.
Well, I've spent a couple of days in Poora.
Yes.
Port Welshpool.
Nice.
People. And having a look around at one of my favourite things, is brutalist architecture. And there's plenty of it down here.
Yes, John, we have really, really bad reception, I'm afraid. We can hardly hear you. You're breaking up.
Yeah, let's see how we go now.
All right, I'm just going to bump the volume. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, all right.
Have you got any art thing to talk about, or are you just going to...
Well, I was going to talk about the brutalist architecture that just abounds in this part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly to do with, I think, with butter factories that were built in the 1950s and 60s, and they favour the cream brick kind of version this way, with lots of slitted windows and bunker style, and I just think they're fabulous.
Oh, take a few pictures for us.
There's one in Toora, which was a dairy dehydration plant.
Oh.
Yeah, powdered milk.
Operation Sally, and you know why?
Why?
They built it out of asbestos.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah. That would be a great mix, I would have thought.
Butter and asbestos.
And dehydrated milk.
Yeah, I wondered why I've got that strange cough. Because I loved powdered milk as a child.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Hmm.
Yeah. Good. In the world, the hydration plant. The Chinese are trying to buy it currently.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me because they find a lot of uses for that asbestos.
Well, no, they certainly find a lot of use for powdered milk. They've dried up all our supplies.
That's right. But they also have been using, or actually they need asbestos because they've been selling asbestos, non-asbestos products to Australia with asbestos in them. So
they have great demand for
asbestos.
They need more asbestos.
Yep.
Okay, Johnny Hot Pants.
Yes.
Up in the hills onto a gazing back of a promontory.
John, it's really, really bad.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to abandon it in that case.
Yes, I think so. Just quickly remind everybody when your exhibition is on at Art House Gallery.
Well, opened on the 17th.
Yep.
Gone very well.
Oh, fantastic. All right, well, we should get some pictures from it up on the website. But thanks for talking to us. It's really just a little bit difficult to hear you. So
okay,
we miss you. Hopefully next week we might get you on a line where you're actually not out with the flies buzzing around.
Yeah.
That'd be good. All right.
We'll call this segment John on the Run On.
Yeah.
John on the Run.
Fabulous. Yeah. Thanks. See you later.
Wow, that was exciting, wasn't it, Sally?
Yeah, kind of exciting. We better hang up.
Yeah, no, that was good. It sounded like a satellite. What was he talking about?
Flies buzzing around.
Dehydration.
Asbestos built up butter factories out in the...
And what was the bit about architecture I couldn't get?
Brutalist architecture, butter factories.
Right.
Yes.
I think brutalist architecture is another word for, you know, just practical building, isn't it, on a farm?
Well, maybe. Yes, perhaps it is. Although I've seen some of those butter factories and they're big, heavy-walled things. And as he was talking about, with slit windows and so on.
Yeah, it sounds like a bunker.
I hope you take some pictures of them.
Brings back bad memories for me, of course, anything to do with a bunker.
Does it?
Well, yeah, no, I can't really talk about it.
Right, I see.
All right, we got a bit wacko, mabacko and scracko on all that business, did we?
Yeah, we did.
So...
We're going to have an interview in a minute
yes.
that I have done with Julie Collins. She's the curator of the Lawn Sculpture Biennale that's on at the moment. And she's talked to us briefly. She's been the curator there for 3 years. This is her last year. And let's listen to what she has to say about that.
I will listen.
The Lawn Sculpture Biennale opened for the fifth time last weekend, and until the 3rd of April, Lawn will be populated by dozens of sculptures from some of the country's top established and emerging artists. Curator of the event for the last 3 years, Julie Collins is on the line with us this morning to talk to us about it and to tempt some of you over to the other side. Good morning, Julie. Welcome to Arts About.
Good morning, Sally. Good morning, everyone.
Now, for some of our listeners, for the very few of our listeners that don't really know yet about it, can you give us a brief and potted history of the Lawn Sculpture Biennale?
Well, it started in 2007 and it's every 2 years being a biennale, and it's an outdoor sculpture exhibition which pretty much spans from the pier to the river, and over the years it's developed to become larger and larger, so more artists being exhibited, and incorporates a couple of small exhibitions which are inside, and also a performance art program and a very detailed education program too.
Very detailed, looking at the schedule. How many artists actually participate? How many sculptures are there out on the foreshore?
On the foreshore, there's 38 large works. From the pier to the river, but then all up, I've been working with over 110 separate artists.
Yes, amazing, amazing. The physicality of that is just mind-boggling. The event draws artists from all over the country who donate their time and work and efforts to the event. I assume it's a pretty hot ticket for the sculptor's calendar. $25,000 is a very significant inducement. Tell us about the judging process.
Well, I select the judges. So this year we had Tom Busby, who's the director of the Koori Heritage Trust. We had John Wardle, who's an architect. And we had Jill Orr, who's one of our performance artists, but Jill Orr's got an international reputation for her photography and installation and performance artwork. So I really wanted a mix of judges. I didn't want the usual suspects. Mm-hmm. Often judges get asked to be, this time judges get asked to judge things again and again and again. I just wanted to mix it up a bit. So they had a big walk on Friday morning. They had lunch. They discussed. They debated. They went backwards and forwards. And in the end, they chose Jenny Crompton's piece, which is an installation of beautiful sort of copper woven beautiful pieces. And Jenny's an Indigenous artist, but she's using very sort of contemporary manner to actually create these beautiful images, these beautiful pieces.
I think I've seen a picture of them. They're hanging, aren't they? A series of them. Yes. Is it on the website? Is it on the...
Yes, it is, yes.
Fantastic. It's interesting that you say that it's important to get a variation of the judges and to vary and not only to get the usual suspects. I suppose that's because, you know, sculpture is such a broad church and it's probably, it's so open in the directions that it can go that you really wouldn't want to minimise it by a certain point of view, would you?
No. I mean, what I aim for as a curator is to really present the diversity of what contemporary sculpture is and can be. And so, for me, the selection of the work is really what the exhibition is about. The judging process is like something else on top. And everyone always asks me, who do I think is going to win? Who do I think is going to win? I never, ever, ever know.
Really?
Because I'm always so very, very close to each of the pieces because I've followed them right from proposal right up to being installed. But I must admit, Jenny Crompton is pretty much a standout winner and she's been a very popular choice from the general public.
Right. Tell me, is it an acquisitive prize?
No. It's not this year. Previous years, we've sort of had an acquisitive nature to the prizes. But I find that sometimes acquisitive prizes actually limit the type of artwork that people propose because they keep within a budget. And for me, I want an ephemeral work to be able to stand up against a solid collectible work on an equal footing. So I find that non-acquisitive prizes are the most exciting.
Now, there's also an exhibition of maquettes there, isn't there?
Yeah, this is something that I introduced this year. Not every sculptor makes a maquette or a model of their work, but many, many do. And so I really gave the artist the option to exhibit and try and sell the maquette from their trail piece. I confidently say 99% of them said yes, I'll do that. And we have some fantastic works now. Now, some aren't the exact model of what's on show. Some of them just capture the essence of kind of what's on show. But I mean, pretty much people coming in can identify each artist from their trail piece. And it also allows people who might like to start to collect sculpture who haven't got the money or haven't got the space to purchase a large one, loved it. They're all going into the market exhibition saying, well, I want that one.
Good, starting small.
Yes.
Now, the program is enormous, but it isn't just a matter of seeing these beautiful sculptures in locations around the foreshore, is it? There are talks by artists, there are workshops, performances, conversations with sculptors, night viewing times.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think these events, you know, if people are going to make the big effort to drive to launch, you have to give them a multi-layer, layered experience. And seeing the sculptures is like wonderful. The kind of, for me, actually helping expand audiences and helping people understand contemporary art more is like really important. So I have layered up a whole lot of different talks and mini tours and conversations and like experiences. So if people do come to Lawn, you know, they'll have plenty to immerse themselves in.
And these intense programs are sort of they're located on the weekends, aren't they, or for Friday to Monday?
Yeah, Friday to Monday. And of course we have Easter coming up too. So I'm treating Easter like 2 weekends. So that's a, like a intense period of lots of talks and performance art programs and things. But I mean every weekend for the next 3 weekends. Definitely lots of
activities. I just love the way that Lawn seems to get right behind these events as well. I mean, they've got that incredible swimming carnival and the Lawn Arts Festival and the Sculpture Prize. There must be some pretty seriously civically minded people running things down there. They must have a cooperative council.
Well, as a community, they are fantastic. I mean, in the 2007 exhibition, I was an exhibiting sculptor, and I remember saying to people then that it was one of the nicest experiences that I'd ever felt. I felt like the community was right behind the exhibition and very welcoming, and you walked into the shops and there were lots of volunteers and people were saying, oh, you're one of the sculptors, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a curator, I've definitely harnessed that and definitely kind of appreciated how wonderful they are. We have a fantastic volunteer committee who are full of, you know, ex-CEOs of this or advisors for that. I mean, we have an amazing skilled board that kind of is behind it. But Lawn as a community is right behind their arts, and they have their film festival and they have their performing arts.
It's quite, yes, and that fabulous, fabulous gallery run by Graham Wilkie's down
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely, and so Graham was it was actually Graham's idea for the sculpture festival, and like he's the vice president, and like he's like a really driving force behind all the creativity there.
Yes, he's quite a remarkable man, and his gallery Kudos is sensational. Lawn's had a pretty challenging summer, of course, with the threat of fires burning down there at Wye River and Separation Creek. I believe that you've actually extended the sculptures into that area this year. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, of course, the Christmas Day bushfires were absolutely devastating for the Wye River and Separation Creek area. And the people of Lawn were on high alert, and then they were eventually evacuated. And but the winds turned, and Lawn spared. So, you know, everyone was relieved and felt how lucky they were. And then it turned to, oh my God, what can we do? We were the lucky ones. What can we do to actually help those communities that were burnt out? So the Sculpture Biennale was seen as the next major event for the region, and it just seemed like a logical solution to actually extend the program to Wye River. So we've engaged Shosho Shimbo, who is a sculptor, the Japanese-born Australian sculptor who's also an Ikebana master. So Shosho is creating two sculptural forms on the beach out of charred wood and debris from the fire site, and people are actually bringing down things from their properties and giving them to him to incorporate into these fantastic forms.
Oh, wonderful. So this is actually occurring throughout
this
the process.
This is occurring now, and this will happen every weekend until the 3rd of April, and on the 3rd of April we're going to have a celebration.
Wonderful. Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. And there's also 5 small sculptures in the general store and 5 small sculptures in the hotel. So we just really wanted people to have a reason to drive from Lawn down to Wai. And I just spoke to the my dog.
Well, we love animals on the show.
I just spoke to the manager from the general store, and I said, "Oh, how was the weekend?" And he said, "I didn't have." And he said that he didn't have time to look up from the coffee machine the whole day.
That's great. Well, that's they all need an injection of positivity down there, don't they?
Absolutely, absolutely.
How brilliant. Now, this is your last, you've curated three of the Lawn Biennales. Yes. This is your last one. You're going to need a bit of a holiday, of course, after this, aren't you?
Absolutely. I've been looking at, tropical islands. Not that Lawn isn't relaxing and wonderful, but I'm not down there to relax.
No. Well, it is an amazing thing that you have done for Lawn and for all of us, as well as the opportunity to get down to a beautiful location and see some incredible work. The Lawn Biennale is on until the 3rd, I think you said, of April. There's also the opportunity to put back and for us to go down and do something good at Lawn. And thank you so much for talking to us today, Julie Collins.
Terrific. Thank you, Sally. And I'll see everybody at Lawn.
Yeah, you will certainly see me. Thank you very much and good luck.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Once again, it is time to welcome our elder, our statesman, writer, columnist, blogger. He's getting quite impatient there, waving his hand. Inventor of the flash mob. It's Cliff Allen. I did not know you invented a flash mob.
I don't know what a flash mob is.
Beautiful.
I don't think he did.
And good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Clifford.
How lovely. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as I've said many times, you know a lot of things about a lot of things. Small bits of information you're very good at.
Yeah, tiny bits. You can...
Trivial information.
You can get 11 seconds out of me after that, my knowledge.
No, I just went... I was down at the shops before.
Yep.
And a lady came out with about 8 loaves of bread. And she put them under this big tree. And there are thousands of seagulls appeared instantly, you know, going for their lives. You know,
seagulls
do that.
Yep.
But on another tree, there are thousands of crows. Then about 8 of the crows swooped down on the seagulls. And all the seagulls nicked off. And then about 8 crows there, standing there alone. But the bread had gone. And then another 4 or 5 seconds. And then all the seagulls came back. I took a few pictures. Who's in charge?
Well,
I mean, I've got those down at Rye, and I've also got magpies, but magpies never go near the seagulls or the crows. So who's in charge, the crows or the seagulls?
I reckon the crows are.
Well, the crows are in charge by force, but the seagulls are in charge through persistence.
Yeah.
But you've touched on a very important issue there, Cliff.
Yeah.
Because of the variety and diversity of species is ever shrinking, there'll come a day on this earth that the seas will be full of jellyfish, the skies will be full of seagulls and crows, and the ground will be full of echidnas, because nothing eats an echidna, and rats. That's it.
Cockroaches.
Heavens. Well, that's,
yeah,
that's
all right.
Very depressing. Now, congratulations to La Mama, 50 years. That's fantastic.
Oh, my
it?
Goodness, yes.
Started with the gorgeous Betty Burstall and continued on by Liz Jones. I missed the first 7 years, but after that I did about 7 or 8 plays there and a couple at the courthouse. So they're doing something called the Book Project.
Not another Burstall.
At lamama.com.au. The Book Project, one word. Something to do with a lavish coffee table book as part of the anniversary's festivities. I've already put a couple of pages in on my memories, but I didn't put any nasty stuff in. I just deleted the nasty stuff. And
do you need an establishing preface to remind everybody of who you are?
No, I just put my experiences at La Mama by Cliff Allen.
Beautiful.
Who knows? Liz Jones probably doesn't know me. You know,
would not know you?
I haven't worked there since, God knows, probably before 1990.
I would have loved to have seen you on the boards in the 70s, Cliff.
Yeah.
Doing all that Brecht and crazy theatre of cruelty.
Who's this Brecht play?
You Bertie.
Keep mentioning him.
Bertie.
No, that's very good. Congratulations, La Mama. Fantastic place. fantastic
place. It is a fantastic
place.
We're very lucky to have it. It's a nursery ground for an awful lot of theatre artists, and it's a great, you know, a place to try out work with an audience of, you know, thinking theatre goers. It's
correct.
Wonderful. Yeah.
And we've got the distance at South Bank to April with Nadine Gardner, Susan Pryor and Katrina Milosevic. You know her? Did you watch Wentworth, the television series?
No, but I...
She's a very big girl in that series.
No.
She's a fantastic actor. Mind you,
what's her name, sorry?
Katrina Milosevic.
Ah, Milosevic.
And she's fantastic. But it's an all-female play, you know. It's a twist on the pressures of motherhood expectations, so it won't be one I'll be going to see, but all the ladies should go and see.
Yeah,
right, okay.
Yeah, I might give that a...
No, there's only three females in. They're great. They're all great actors. So Nadine Gardner, come on.
Cliff, before you get on to all your prepared spontaneity...
Yeah.
Can I ask you whether you've seen the play version of Picnic at Hanging Rock?
No, I haven't, but it got a bad review from... who was it that gave the bad review?
I believe it was Cameron Woodhead.
Cameron Woodhead. He didn't give it a bad review. He gave it a mild review. He said the it didn't have that same fear that you had out in the movie, you know.
That's really interesting to hear.
Sort of, I've heard from people that have seen this play that is visceral, portentous, the scariest thing they've ever seen.
Yeah, my daughter went to see it at 16.
Yep.
She said it was absolutely the most terrifying thing that she had ever seen. And she sees horror films. She
and
was really moved by
it.
That
you saw,
yeah, about
saw.
17. But they were so taken with it that they saved up their own pocket money and went in a couple of days later to see it again.
Well,
so
that's the answer, isn't it? Yeah. It's good for the young people.
Yeah, maybe it is a young people's play.
Yeah.
Or
they'll probably get along.
Or try not to listen too well to the critics and just get along and see something. Perhaps.
Yes, yes.
Listen well?
Now, what about this? I know you're not political, you lot, but isn't it about time we got that $100 million that they cut us, George Brand has cut us out of the arts from?
Yeah, it absolutely is.
We've got Malcolm in charge. He's an arts man. It's
I know.
He did something.
Well, he has handed some of it back, but not significantly enough.
Maybe May the 10th will be the day.
Yeah, I do hope so, because it's...
What's
happening
on May the 10th, Peter?
International...
May Day?
Bomb Day, is it?
No, it's Budget Day.
Oh, Budget Day.
It could be Budget
Day. The Budget Bomb.
Oh, yes, the budget.
Now, Sally, you can take the floor now.
Okay, well, look, I went and saw Secret River last week with Will. And I believe you're going off to see it on Wednesday, aren't you?
I am, provided there's no heat waves.
Yes, well, yeah. I'd be very interested to hear what you think about it. I think it's really... I'm struggling a little bit. It's very beautiful. It's a gorgeous set. There are some sensational devices. There's some great performers in it. I have a problem with the appropriation of the story, however, I think.
What's it about, Sally?
Well, it's a story of a young man, Thornhill, who is a convict who gains his freedom ultimately, working out in Sydney. He's a boatman, and he takes his young wife and their children out to live on a property that they decide they're going to take because apparently the land is free out there.
On the
Hawkesbury
River.
Beautiful. So it's a story of him, his family, and their interaction with the local Indigenous peoples. And it's really, you know, it's an extraordinary novel written by Kate Granville that won, I think it was the Booker Prize quite a few years ago. And it's been made into a television series and so on.
Would you give it any stars?
Yes, I would give it a few stars.
Four stars.
I think it's just one of those things, you know, you go and see plays by Melbourne Theatre Company and Sydney Theatre Company and they're slick and they've got lots and lots of money thrown at them and they do it really, really well. And yet I just felt that there was nothing new made of that story and I wondered why it had been made into a play, given that the book is so good. So there we are. I mean, it's a terrible thing because as a theatre maker, and I love the theatre, but I was a tiny bit mystified by the leap that everybody made to their feet at the end and the standing ovation that it was given. Not that it wasn't a good play, but I just felt, you know, it's...
Did God come up on stage?
God did come up on stage, yes.
Well, that's
Neil Armfield, the director, I assume you're meaning. Yes.
Oh,
Sally's getting a bit hot under the collar. We've just had Brendan, the station manager, coming in.
Waving a fan.
And pat her wrist. Look, I'm too afraid to get near her.
Nia's in the audience and half the audience will be clapping madly anyway.
Yeah.
They do that. And but look, it's interesting because The Secret River was a TV series, which I hardly got through.
Yes.
No good at all. And the other one, Cloud Street.
Yes.
The book bored me a bit. The television series was worse. But Cloud Street was fantastic. I mean, it was gripping. It was
the stage play. Yes, okay.
And Neil Armfield can do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I'd be very surprised if I don't think it's gripping. Mind you, if Neil was there, I'd think it's fantastic.
Tell me, have you read the book?
I might tell the truth.
Have you read the book?
Kate Granville's book?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Well, then it'll be really interesting to see what...
I mean, I do know the story, loosely, but...
Which, it is a terrific story.
It's got that Aboriginal thing too. So I'm not a bit surprised they gave it a standing ovation. Or that Neil got on stage. I've seen him do it a few times. Mm. I did a couple of plays with him. And both times they called Neil up on stage.
Yep.
I really didn't call him up on stage.
He just went along with it, Cliff.
No.
Yes.
Well, now... What else have I got to talk about?
Or are
you
going to
close me up? You can close me up. I don't mind.
You've been talking for quite a while, Cliff.
I was really just going to have a go at Bruce Bilson and his $750,000 grant towards a weatherproof structure to house the sand sculpting exhibition at Frankston.
Oh, what?
That's a lot of money.
It's probably for a structure to cover the sand.
It's probably a second tier.
Who likes those things? I'm sorry.
Everybody, Sally. Don't be such a snob. And our good friend... our good friend Michael runs that.
I know, Michael Winningslow, and he is our good friend.
I thought that bricky sand was impervious to a bit of rain and all that. It doesn't fall down, does it? It packs tight.
Yes.
I think Bilson's, whatever his name is, are just doing his little political bit. It'll never come to pass.
It's a major attraction.
But he's put it up as an option.
Major. Mm. I was in that pub opposite one day and it's packed. Yeah, no wonder Bruce wants...
$50,000. Come on.
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I'll get down there.
I'm going to stop paying my taxes.
Now, Cliff, what are you going to do for the rest of the afternoon?
Oh, it's a big day today. Mm-hmm. I'm having a rest because next week's Easter and I've just got through May Day and all those thousands of people that come down to the seaside
holiday village
of Rye. So, you know, I'll probably do nothing. I'll go to the RSL and a bit of peace.
Fabulous.
Idiots.
Easter is the last tourist and spurt.
It'd be great.
And what about a song?
Well, I'll be 80 next week. Mm-hmm. So let's play I'll See You in My Dreams. I mean, I prefer this one by, Memory of George Harrison.
Oh, I haven't got that version. One? No.
No,
I've got Django Reinhardt's version. Is that okay?
That's a really good one. When I hear that one, I sort of...
Yeah, let's not forget he's playing this with...
I feel sorry for myself.
he's playing this with only seven fingers, everybody.
Oh, okay. Django's fantastic.
Good on you, Cliff.
See you, Cliff.
God, it goes on.
It's time for the news.
Look, I haven't finished typing. Wait a sec. One moment, please. Pardon. Carriage, carry four. Very good.
Look, it's time for the news, Swan. Yes, the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery have a series of new exhibitions coming up, and I think they open today. They are the McClelland Collection, which is going on show, David Gent's Sculpture, and Jackie Stockdale Drawing the Labyrinth. I think we better get John Cunningham in here.
Is he the guy that does cutlery, David Gent's?
No.
Or is that Jorg?
Jorg
Jensen.
Don't know.
Yeah, once I got some years ago, and my brother told his wife that Peter had got some cutlery, some George Jetson cutlery.
Can you stop? We're trying to get through the news here.
Carry on.
All right. Emma Coulter has won the very significant $10,000 Linden Art Prize, and I'm hoping we might get to chat with her on the program next week.
Yep.
Fabric, Minimalist and Conceptual Approaches to Textiles is on at the Ian Potter Museum of Art, the Margaret Lawrence Gallery and the VCA and the Sutton Project Space.
Yeah, das Fabrik ist ausgezeichnet.
Stop adding things, Swanee. The 2016 Montalto Annual Prize is announced and open to the public. You've got to get there and see it. Make sure you do. It's James Parrott won that prize. That's a $30,000 prize.
Apparently Ryan Downey is playing at the Toff. Can you tell us about that, Sally?
Ryan Downey is an amazing young indie folk artist who's about to launch an a cappella mini LP called Me and Her, and I'm a little bit fond of him. I'm going to be talking to him next week on the program. I'm a tiny bit excited about that. But if you want to go and see him or listen to him, go onto his website, or go to the Toff in town on the 31st of March.
Yes, and if you happen to be sailing up to Sydney, you can catch John's exhibition at the Art House Gallery.
Yes, indeed you can. And friend of the show, Judy Singleton, a ceramicist and ex-Raw Studio artist, has sent us an invitation to read out to people. It's for Claymates Easter Exhibition, and that's at the Dramana Potters Group. And they've got an exhibition on Saturday the 26th to Monday the 28th. It's at the old Dramana Shire building. Look out for the flags, apparently.
Yeah, and get rid of the homeless people sleeping on the floor in there.
What homeless people?
No, I just made that up.
Yeah, I thought you might have. There's a new exhibition on at the Merrick's General Store. Mike Nichols, another original member of Raw Studios, funnily enough. And his exhibition opened yesterday and runs until the 25th of April. So you better get him here as well. The Lawn Sculpture Biennale opened last weekend and runs until April the 3rd. There's just so much on that program. Go and look at sculptures. Go and talk to sculptors. Go and see a little bit of performance. There's masses of things there.
Yeah. Will I say the next one?
Yes, you will. Hurry up.
Vault is a large format new art and culture quarterly magazine focusing on the Australian and New Zealand broader international visual arts with parallel interest in fashion, architecture, food writing and other outstanding forms of creative expression.
Yeah. Have a look at their website.
Get yourself a copy.
Frankston Theatre Company have their production of The Odd Couple opening at Mount Eliza Community Centre Friday, April the 15th. So go onto their website, frankstontheatregroup.org, for more info. If you've just tuned in, you've missed Arts About. But if you can want to catch up on the show, you don't bother with the podcast because apparently they don't seem to be putting them up there very regularly. So Brendan Station Manager.
Excuse me. Saucer of milk, table two.
The show is also repeated on air and streaming Wednesdays at 12 if you want to catch up on it. Find a link, go to our Facebook page and you'll find some links for things. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art,
but we know what we like.
We do.
Love it, Sally. See you later.